This is episode 424, dated Friday, August 8th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Good to be here with you. This is episode 424, dated Friday, August 8th, 2025. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing today?
We're doing fine, Bob. In Oregon, it's warm. It's 75 degrees. It's a warm day for us here in Coos Bay, Oregon. Weather is gorgeous, sunny and windy and, you know, usual breeze. So we're happy to be here.
We're sunny today, temperatures around 80. We've had the effects of the Canadian fires in New England this week with all the smoke. It's affected Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, maybe a couple of other New England states. But I think it's lightened up because the wind direction changed, and thank God that we're at the end of it, at least for now. Hopefully we'll be at the end of it for good. I want to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer and editor. Thank you for what you do. I also want to extend the same thanks to our media outlets. We have a new media outlet to talk about, Blue Streak Radio. They used to air our show, but they took a sabbatical for technical reasons, but they are back. So I want to welcome once again Blue Streak Radio. And thank them for airing us along with the other media sources. I also want to thank Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions for archiving our shows on my website. In order to find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Trish, our facilitator, and Brad, our streamer, for today's program. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to write us. We encourage our listeners to write us here on In Perspective. We want to know how you feel about the show. If you may have questions about past episodes, what our guests spoke about, we want to hear from you. So write to us at bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's all one word. BobBranco93@gmail.com.
Bob, we're very pleased. Do the guest. I just want to also give a shout out to Jane Corona, who sent me this morning a very nice email about our show. She's going through some difficult moments, but she's a fan of our show and wanted to tell us to keep doing what we're doing.
Is she related to Anthony?
No.
Okay, because we know an Anthony Corona who
was
a guest of ours,
which we can talk about later.
Okay, perfect. I would like to introduce a regular fixture of In Perspective, and that's former New York Congressman John Laboutier. He's come back for another appearance, and we're very grateful to have him, of course. Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Peter, and I just love the show. I'm looking forward to it all week when I see him coming on, and let's have a great hour together.
We usually do. You always provide us with some very informative material for us to think about. So I don't even know where to begin. Peter, do you know what you want to begin?
Let me run at something, Bob, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So, John, the Congressman, I want you to put on your political strategist hat. And I'm really curious about this Epstein thing, what the no-Trumpers are doing. They're trying to get Epstein up to the forefront. Hoping it will take down Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump has all kinds of problems. We all know that. I lived in New York. Johnny lived in New York. We all know the hijinks he did when we were both in New York. What I'm mystified by is what the Trump haters think they're going to get out of this. Let's assume, for sake of argument, that there's uncontrovertible evidence that that Trump had sex with minors. Let's just say there's evidence of that. How much difference would that make for Trump supporters?
He'd be Bennett.
Why are we spending so much effort on this particular topic, where there are other things I think would be far more effective.
Well, okay. First of all, there are also, you're right, there are huge issues that we have to discuss, including the latest news that's come out while we're taping this before people can hear it, about Trump, Putin, Zelensky, and what is at the heart of the upcoming summit that they're going to have and a possible settlement of the war in Ukraine. That's, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives depend on this thing. So that's huge. But Peter, let me just say, on the Epstein thing, I don't think it's the anti-Trump people that got this thing up and running again. It was Dan Bongino, a huge Trumper who's number two at the FBI, former podcaster who promoted this Epstein thing for years. He's now, as I said, number two in the FBI. And a month ago, he gives an interview where he says, I can't believe that we're not releasing everything on the Epstein thing. I never thought this day would come. He has a verbal altercation with his boss, Pam Bondi, the attorney general, threatens to quit, misses a day of work in protest, finally decides to keep his job. But when that guy, of all people, Mr. Pro-Trump, when he raises red flags about what's in the Epstein files, that's what launched this new wave of this. And ever since then, every single day, it is Trump who is trying to distract people from it, calling the thing BS, yet he's having his vice president, chief of staff, attorney general, deputy attorney general, have meetings in the White House about what are we going to do about it. He's sending his deputy attorney general to prison to meet with Ghislaine Maxwell, the co-conspirator with Epstein. I mean, this thing is Trump created, Trump fueled, and the polling shows 81% of the American people blame Donald Trump. And I have the poll right here. Blame Donald Trump for not releasing the information and not coming clean on this thing. That's one thing. Now, you've then raised the hypothetical. What if Trump somehow was shown to have sex with a minor? And I rudely interrupted you, Peter, because if that comes out, he's finished as president. He may stay as president, but his support will collapse. There is no support in America for statutory rape. Just not happening. I mean, and he knows it. And that's why he's scrambling so much, because there is a credible allegation going back to 2016 from a woman who was, when she was a girl, when she was 13, she claimed Trump raped her at an Epstein party. Now, she filed suit twice in 2016. First under the legal name Katie Johnson, second time under the name Jane Doe, and the case was withdrawn. And we don't know why. We don't know if there was a payoff, non-disclosure agreement. We don't know. But that Trump has tried every effort he can to keep stuff like that buried. That is why the Epstein files are not being made public. Trump can make them all public this minute. It's his Justice Department. They do whatever he tells them to do. They're not releasing that stuff. Why? Because he's in them. And it's his problem. Yeah.
So I guess what I would say about that, I agree with you, John, that if any other guy was president and there was credible, more than credible evidence of statutory rape, that would be the end of his presidency. I'm not convinced that's true of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has weathered so much other stuff in his life. I think he's the unusual person who can shoot somebody in Fifth Avenue and get away with it. I'm just not convinced that it would have it doesn't speak well for us as a country that would have a marked impact on what would happen, you know, as far as his presidency is concerned.
Well, the only reason I said it that way was because I would have agreed with you normally, except on this one thing. The MAGA base, which is infused with QAnon people, they're the ones who promoted this idea that there's a group of pedophiles running the country and that Donald Trump was the guy that they backed to go to Washington and clean it up, which, of course, was an idiotic notion in the first place. I think they're waking up to the facts. Part of why his poll numbers are going down is they're sort of seeing all these pictures every day of Trump hanging out with Epstein. I guess Fox doesn't show that stuff. But wherever these people are getting their news, they're beginning to learn that Trump and Epstein were two peas in a pod. And I think that is why Trump is so afraid of this thing, why he is suing. Are you ready? The Wall Street Journal and yes, Rupert true. Murdoch for $10 billion. He is scared to death of something coming out that he thinks obviously would be very dangerous to him.
One other comment, and I'll there are lots of things we need to talk about. It seems to me that these Epstein files are going to indicate lots of people involved with this stuff, powerful people. And one of the things I've been reading about this from different people, liberals, conservatives or whatever, is people are just pissed off that, that the average person gets one, treatment of the justice system and the rich people get a different take on the justice system. And I think people are really tired of it. And I think that's what propelled Trump into office in the first place. That sort of double standard that Trump was able to sort of ride to the White House. So I'm really curious, you know, if the files are indeed released, who else is going to be implicated? The Clintons, for example, there are some connections. So I guess we'll find out.
Well, definitely a connection. Bill Clinton, yeah. Flew on the plane and went to the island and the whole bit. And, you know, I'm amazed that Trump hasn't ordered the release of guys like that. We know that Bill Gates of Microsoft fame, he went there repeatedly. His wife told him not to. He went anyway. And that was one of the reasons they got divorced. And Prince Andrew has been ruined by his association with Epstein. Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, used to go to that island. Alan Dershowitz. I mean, a lot of prominent people and more probably that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
And I think we got to be very frank. What are they going there for? Why are big shots flying all over the world to come to Jeffrey Epstein's house? A guy that didn't even graduate from college. What is going on? And the answer, I hate to say it, they all share one thing, a horrible thing. They like to have sex with underage young girls. That's what was going on.
And how's that? You know, we'd have people like that. Well, in one case, what, you know, potentially being the current president, you know, if, you know, we don't know that for certain, of course.
Incredible. So I want to get to the summit that you touched on with Putin and Zelensky and Trump. Tell us more about that, Congressman, and what do you think is going to be the end result of that summit?
Well, as we are reporting this thing, the latest story that's come out today is, maybe at the end of next week, the week that this podcast will appear on Monday, I guess it is. They may meet. First, it'll just be Trump and Putin. Putin has not agreed yet to meet Zelensky. But we now know from Wall Street Journal story that's just come out. Putin proposed yesterday in a meeting with the White House negotiator Steve Witkoff that he would be willing to stop the war in Ukraine if Ukraine would just give him one section of Ukraine that the Russians currently mostly occupy called the Donbass. Now, they don't occupy all of it. It would mean Ukraine would be giving up more territory. That has to be talked about. But in return for that, Putin says his government will pass legislation or whatever and promise no more attacking Ukraine or anybody else in Europe. When this was given to Trump the other day, Trump said, okay, let's use this as a basis to get together with Putin and see if there's something here we can negotiate. He called the Western European leaders, UK, Germany, France, Poland, let them know about it. And Zelensky is fully aware of this thing. And Zelensky has said, apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, first thing that has to happen is a complete ceasefire. We're not doing anything until there, and we're willing to do a ceasefire. It's Putin who keeps bombing the hell every night out of Ukrainian civilians. So that's got to stop right away. No more drone attacks, missiles, all that. So, you know, we're going to see. Putin is bad news. He seems to have Trump's number. He manipulates Trump or plays Trump. But lately, I think Trump sort of had enough of it and slapped sanctions on countries that buy Russian oil. And that may be motivating Putin to negotiate. We'll see. But we got to get this war stopped because so many people are dying. And it's ridiculous what this thing is. It's an invasion by Russia of a sovereign country. And to have the president of the United States for several months going along with this and equating the leader of Ukraine on the same level as the invader, saying, they're both at fault. They're like kids in this playground fighting each other and let them fight it out. I mean, this has just been an embarrassment.
Putin initiated it. Zelensky
No, I know. I'm saying, but that's not the way Trump has portrayed it for the last 3 years.
Right.
Remember, early on, Putin first went in, and Trump went on. He was not president. He's former president. He goes on Fox or something. He says, this is genius. This is genius what Putin has done. He's said it's an independent territory, and he's going in there. He called Putin a genius. Now, you know, I'm sorry. I just think I use the word embarrassed. As an American, I'm embarrassed to have my president say stuff like that about the single worst leader, murderer, since Adolf Hitler. This guy's the worst.
Why would Trump call him a genius? What would be his
reason? I don't know.
Or do we know?
Well, because he's been in the thrall of Vladimir Putin all along. We know that. He's always remember the time in Helsinki?
Yeah.
When they're having a joint press conference and Jonathan Lemire, who was then, I think, UPI, I forget, asked Trump, what about Putin interfering in the election? And Trump says, well, I don't see why Putin would have done that. He says he didn't do it, and I believe him. Are you kidding me? We're believing, the American president is believing a KGB agent over our own director of national security, Dan Coats, who made it very clear that we have the evidence, and we do, of a massive attempt by the Russian government in 2016 to influence the election on the side of Trump. There's not even a doubt about it. So
can we talk about tariffs for a second? Because you mentioned Trump putting a tariff on certain countries because they support, you're getting Russian oil, India, for example. What is, the whole tariff thing is this, what for me, just wildly weird. You know, one time they're on, one time they're off. It can't be good for any business. I work for help small businesses get better, and for them it's a disaster because they don't know they're hit more by the tariffs than the bigger businesses are. What is your reading on what's going on about that?
Well, first of all, we're taping this thing. What is today? August 8th. Yesterday was the day the tariffs finally went into effect. So up until yesterday, all the talk, the on again, off again, Liberation Day, blah, 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 blah. It was talk, but it didn't actually go into effect in most cases. Now it's in effect. And, they will really start to bite later this year. There's no doubt. There are going to be consequences for every business and every consumer. And what are they going to be? Shortages of products, increased prices. That's what we're going to see. It's inflationary. It will cause layoffs in the job market, which is already happening, which Trump didn't like. So rather than address the problem, he fired the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics because he didn't like the numbers they came up with. They didn't rig the numbers, as you said. These are the numbers. Jobs are not being created as quickly, in part because of this tariff uncertainty, and businesses don't know how to plan for the future if they don't know the cost of goods, the basic thing that business is built on. Cost of goods, cost of labor. You don't know. because Trump is so erratic about it. So I, you know, within 6 months, I think there'll be a consensus in America that this tariff thing was a complete flop. It did not bring about the change Trump thinks he wants. He thinks, oh, I put tariffs on, and all of a sudden, all these overseas businesses will shift back domestically in the United States. That's not happening. You know, the idea that Apple, which is huge, building this stuff in China, some in Vietnam, some in India, that's all going to pack up and come back over here. How many years is that going to take? And what is the cost of an iPhone made in America going to cost? I've read it's now, you know, they're up to $1,000 for a certain model of iPhone. They could be over $4,000. $4,000 for an iPhone. Imagine it. Because it's made in America when you add in cost of labor and everything. I mean, none of this is going to work, and it's going to be a flop, and he's going to hurt the economy heavily.
What I occasionally read in conservative places that whatever you think of the tariffs, it's helping reducing the deficit because, you know, the money that's coming in from the tariffs being collected by, whoever it is that collects the tariffs. I don't know what to make of that. It seems kind of fishy to me. What do you make of it?
Well, there is tariff income that goes to the federal government. It's been around 20 to 30 billion a month since April 2nd when tariffs started to go on and then came off and all. So there is some income coming in, but let's understand those are taxes that are coming in. And anytime you tax the consumer and the American citizen, the more you tax them, it inevitably slows the growth of the government. It slows the growth of the economy, not the government, growth of the economy. And that's going to happen as long as these tariffs are on. Trump, again today, he gave a statement out. I saw it where I'm not sure he really understands where the money comes from. He keeps saying, oh, yeah, we're taking in all this money from China and from these other countries. No, we're not. That money's not coming from China. It's coming at the dock at the port of Los Angeles. When the freighter unloads containers, the importer, whoever's importing that stuff, pays the tariff on that stuff to the federal government right there at the dock. And it's either from the companies that are bringing, you know, the American companies that are buying these products, or they pass that on to the consumer eventually. So it's Americans paying for this thing, not Chinese, not Japanese. And yet he keeps saying, oh, yeah, we're taking in all this money from these other countries. It doesn't come from the country. I'm not sure how many people even understand it. My guess is of maybe 20% of Americans understand how tariffs work.
What do you make of the agreements he's made with countries with like Japan, for example? You know, I read an article on Town Hall, which is a conservative, saying this was the best deal ever, that all this money is going to come into the state, the country, because people are going to commit it to bringing in billions and billions of dollars by building stuff here. And, you know, all these commitments that have been made. And then you hear people like Paul Krugman saying, this is nonsense. These are commitments that they can't do anything about. The government can't tell their businesses how to spend their money. What do you make of sort of these deals that allegedly have been made, which, by the way, I understand they're not deals. They're sort of frameworks that haven't been actually.
Right. We don't really have any deals. We don't have one legally negotiated trade deal. He had said, I'm going to do 90 deals in 90 days. Now he's got, an agreement in principle with the United Kingdom. I believe he's got one with the European Union. These are not, you know, there's a lot of details to be worked out, but it's in general, we've said, okay, you're getting this tariff on stuff coming into America. And that's what he calls an agreement. Now I'm looking while you're asking me this question, because I saw an article up on the front page of the New York Times today that apparently we had, done some sort of agreement with Japan, but there was a mistake in it. And the Japanese rushed back to the Americans, said, you got to fix this mistake. So I'm not finding it. I will find it while we're talking online. But anyway, yeah, I mean, this thing, you know, they're going to be new deals and new tariff rates. And then we've learned a new phrase through all this called TACO. Mm-hmm. Trump always chickens out. T-A-C-O. Because he always ends up backing down when the pressure gets on him because this stuff's not working. I think he'll taco big time on a lot of these deals when it slows our economy down. And he can't blame it on Joe Biden. This is on him. And this is all his regime. And it's sink or swim with Donald Trump now.
I wanted to get into this whole situation with ICE and how do you think that's progressing? And do you think that it's worth all that the actions that are happening right now involving deportation?
Okay. So what are we? We're in August. In July, the figures that have been released of arrests by ICE have gone way down from June. The June was the peak of the Trump time so far in arresting. Stephen Miller said, I want you guys to arrest 3,000 a day. I believe they got over 1,000 a day in June, and now they're down to 900 or something in July. And they're having a problem with it. It's become unpopular politically, except among the MAGA base, but among the rest of the country, 65% of people, I've watched this stuff on TV. First of all, the idea of masked men running around, grabbing people off the street strikes most people as not the way we do it in America, you know? And Trump ran and was elected legitimately saying, I'm going to take all the bad guy illegals and throw them out of here. And that is still supported by everybody. We all want them out. But we don't want the maid who lives next door, who's been here 30 years and is not a bad lady and just does her job and has American kids, by the way. We don't want her arrested and thrown out. And that is where ICE has gone too far. They've been running around chasing people who've caused no trouble. The famous case of the gardener out in L.A. who was weed whacking out on a lawn somewhere. When these guys came up, the masked men, and tackled the guy and threw him in a detention center. Thank God one of his sons is a Marine. All three of them were Marines and two are still in the Marine Corps. One is a veteran. He went on all the TV shows, says, well, what is this all about? My father hurt nobody. And they've let that guy go. But that's where they're making him. ICE has gone too far. They shouldn't be taking guys like that.
Why do they have to wear masks?
I don't know. I think to protect themselves from retribution from people, who may come after them. And look, I'm sure you guys do too. I'm all for the cops and law enforcement. It's a very difficult job and they're ordered to do this. They're not choosing to do it. They're ordered by Trump and Stephen Miller and Tom Homans and Kristi Noem. And they're given this ridiculous quota. You got to go arrest X amount of people a day. So off they go in sometimes unmarked cars and the masks. I mean, the masks have got to go. To me, that's got to stop right now. If you're so ashamed of doing your job with your face visible, then don't do that assignment. And, you know, there are going to be people who get. Well, a couple things. So American citizens have been scooped up. It's mistaken, but they've scooped them up. And that's an illegal arrest. You can't, in our country, the cops cannot come up to you and just take you. They have to properly read you your rights and, tell you why they're arresting you and all that. They're not doing that with these people. They're just grabbing them and not identifying who they are, why, and they disappear. They disappear into these camps, these detention centers. There are no phones. The one in Florida, the conditions are apparently horrific. In America, we've got like a concentration camp called Alligator Alcatraz.
I heard about that.
yeah, they get one shower a week and terrible food and no phone calls, and they haven't been convicted of anything. I mean, this is nuts, but that's Trump.
And unfortunately, I think there's more of this coming, at least in the short term. ICE was given a lot more money to build more of these kinds of camps.
Yep.
However you want to call them. I guess the issue is, what is a criminal, right? I mean, I've heard people argue that just coming into this country makes you a criminal because you did something illegal, which technically is true. But that doesn't mean that all of them are hardened criminals that have, you know, killed people, you know, or whatever.
Which begs my question.
Part of gangs.
Is my question, for those who are coming here illegally, and if that's a crime in itself, you know, let's not talk about that. They may be criminals. If they are, they are. We deal with that. But if all they did was come here illegally, which is a crime, how do you fix it if we don't want ICE to force the issue the way they have been? I mean, my grandparents came here on Ellis Island, and they became citizens. They did it the proper way. Back in the day, a lot of people did it the proper way. And all of a sudden, people are just flying in here by the thousands, tens
not
of thousands.
Anymore. Not anymore, though.
No, I know. Fairness, no, I know.
Trump, the one thing I'll give Trump credit for, he said he's going to seal up the southern border, and he's done it. And they say 11 million illegals in this country. And we haven't even talked about what do we do about them? I mean, can you really go out and catch, and should you, 11 million people? By the way, in previous decades, there were 1 million illegal Irish people who escaped the potato famine and political repression and came to the United States in what we would call illegally. They came here. They did not do proper immigration and all that. They came and settled in America and have been great citizens, and their kids are citizens. And we don't talk about that.
So they were naturalized, most of them anyway?
I don't think they were. I think they did not come legally. If you come illegally, you cannot naturalize. Well, how do you naturalize if you didn't come here properly? That's the problem with the 11 million, mostly Hispanic people who've come here. They can't become naturalized citizens because they didn't go through the process properly. They crossed the border. Let's say they ended up in St. Louis, Missouri. They're not ever going to be legalized in America. Not happening. They're like here, and they've been here. Some of them have been here for 50 years. 50 years. They're not criminals. I mean, yeah, it was a misdemeanor, by the way, not a felony to cross the border.
Misdemeanor. Is Ellis Island still used as a platform?
No. No.
No.
God,
no. Okay.
It's a museum.
Oh, it is. All right.
Yeah.
So before, I don't know how we're doing for time, Bob, but I want to at least take a run at the Middle East, what's going on in Gaza. And I want to get on the soapbox very briefly and ask a question of Israel. Israel had every right to defend itself after what happened to them, what, 18 months ago or whatever it was, you know, in October, with all the kidnapping and murder. I have no problem with them doing what they've done for the most part. But if they think that doing what they're doing is going to, encourage people not to support Hamas anymore, they didn't take the same psychology course I took. You know, if after 9/11, 2001, whether or not we liked, the U.S. policy in the Middle East, we all rallied behind the president after he lost 3,000 people. Why shouldn't people of Hamas do the same basic thing? It's the same basic dynamic. And, I don't know what the answer is. And I certainly am not, Israel has all kinds of, whatever, but the starvation that is apparently going on there is hard to watch. So what are your thoughts in general about what might happen next or what's been going on or whatever?
Well, there's all these things wrapped into it, including Benjamin Netanyahu's political and legal survival. And that is at the heart of it, because as long as he remains prime minister, he cannot complete his criminal trial, which he is on trial for corruption. But under their system that can be put off while he's prime minister. And so that's been going on for a couple of years. And then October 7 happens and off we go. And we've had successful wars by Israel against Hezbollah in Lebanon and Iran a couple months ago. And that has helped him survive politically and remain in power. The war in Gaza has dragged him down, dragged the country of Israel down, dragged the world down to watch what's happened in Gaza. And now he's announced this new thing where they're going to go in militarily and take over all of Gaza for the first time in 20 years. And when he announced it, he said, well, we're not going to stay there. We're going to clean it out, defeat Hamas, hopefully find the living hostages, and then we'll withdraw and turn Gaza over to an Arab force that is not going to seek the destruction of Israel. A lot of ifs, a lot of this and that. I don't know how long that's going to take. And you don't know how long he's going to stretch it out because as long as he does, he thinks he can remain in power in Israel. And that is driving this thing.
It's about time that we turn our festivities over to our listeners. You are listening to In Perspective. Our featured guest is former New York Congressman John LaBoutelier. So let me ask Trish if we have any hands raised. Does anybody want to ask the former congressman any questions right now?
All right. We actually have four hands.
All right.
The first one is Mitch.
Mitch from Southern California. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And Congressman, I always enjoy your visits here. A quick couple of comments and a question. The most compelling argument against what you have stated regarding Donald Trump and his involvement with Jeffrey Epstein is Joe Biden could have done the same thing that people want Trump to do now, release that file. And I believe that had there been any damning evidence against Trump, the way Biden felt and feels about President Trump, he would have had it released. That's why I don't believe there's anything there. Now, I want to ask you about ICE. First of all, to your comment, Bob, my wife's family came here legally from Mexico many years ago. And the people who come here illegally are disrespecting all of the folks like my in-laws and like my wife's grandparents who all came here illegally. They are lawbreakers. My problem is the way the Trump administration is going about rounding people up. There was a situation day before yesterday where a Penske moving truck showed up at a Home Depot, said we need laborers. 16 individuals ran over to the truck. The back of the truck doors opened up, and masked ICE agents came and rounded them up, and they're probably now in some detention center. That is, as I think the congressman said, is not how America does things. There, and that was done despite the appellate court in the Ninth Circuit here in California putting a court order against rounding up immigrants in the way they did it. Ultimately, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. My question is, does the Supreme Court, as conservative as six members are, to use the vernacular, do they have the huevos to tell the Trump administration once and for all they can't do what they're doing? That's my question.
Well, I'm not qualified to say, but I, in general, believe the Supreme Court will stand up to Trump on certain things. I don't think they're in the tank for Trump. People think they are, but I don't think they are. And they have stopped some of the things that he's tried. But we'll have to say, you know, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing is such a mess. But I just want to answer because it's hanging there. I looked up while we were talking. there is a disagreement between Japan and the United States over the amount of tariff that Trump has put on Japan. And Japan doesn't know what the tariff is, and they've asked for clarification. And it's because of what Peter said about the confusion of Trump. It's on again, off again, and he keeps changing the numbers of the tariff on each country. So he put a 25% tariff on Japan. That was a pre-existing 12% on them. That makes 37%. And then the Trump people said, oh, we have a de-stacking. We won't stack the previous tariff onto the new tariff. And Japan wants to see that in writing to take it back down to 25 from 37. So it's all confusing, like everything out of Trump's mouth. It's confusing. What is his policy on all this stuff? You can't figure it out.
I would have voted for any Republican for president but Donald Trump. I think, you know, as bad as things are 8 months into his presidency, it really does scare me to think about what things are going to be like in 3 years. I think we've got some very difficult times ahead, and it's just this. I read a book a couple of years ago talking about the future, the 21st century in America, and the author said there will be a crisis sometime between 2030. And this book, he wrote this book in the early 2000s before anybody knew anything about Trump, other than the fact that he had America, his TV show, and I fear that prediction is coming true.
Yeah. Well,
maybe
right.
We should bring him on the show, Mitch.
If I could remember his name, I could do the research and find it, I think. But these are scary times.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman.
We should do a show on immigration because, Mitch, what Mitch says is, of course, true. But there's another side of the story, which we can talk about another time. Who else do we have?
Trish?
All right, next we have Rick.
Hello, Rick. Welcome. You may be muted. I don't know, though.
He is.
If you're on a phone, it's star 6. Otherwise, it's all day.
Rick?
All right,
let me see.
Oh, there he is.
Hi, Rick. Hello.
Okay, there we go.
Hey, Rick. Rick from Florida. Yes.
Yes, he's it. First of all, Congressman, I admire a lot of what you say, and I have to tell you, I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I admire a lot of what you say, and you covered so many of the things that I wanted to touch on. I think my question is, knowing the situation, As an average American, my wife and I, we go to protests, we go to town meetings, we go to town halls, we do quote unquote all of the right things. In a couple of weeks, we live here in Florida. In a couple of weeks, we're going to go to the detention center. There's going to be a mass there done by a priest, and we're going to go to that mass. It's going to be a Catholic mass. But my question is, outside of doing that and writing Congress and writing, you know, senators and stuff, what do we do? Where do we go? Well, I think that stuff and protesting, all of it is the best we can do until the 2026 midterm elections. That's the first time the country as a whole has a chance to vote up or down on the Trump agenda. And history says when there's an unpopular administration in charge, the out party does really well in that midterm election. So that as of today, that would mean the Democrats would be favored to win one House of Congress, probably the House of Representatives, much more likely, in 2026. The minute, if the Democrats were to win one or both houses of Congress, That changes all, everything we talked about for the last 45 minutes, because now there's a check on Trump. He doesn't get the money. He doesn't have a budget. He doesn't have the money anymore to do what all the stuff he wants to do. He'd be getting investigated left and right. All that will happen the minute the Democrats retake power. So what is he doing? He knows that. He's already been through that once. So what's he doing about it? Well, he's trying to do something we never really have in this country, mid-decade redistricting, to force Republican states to create new Republican districts, up to maybe a dozen nationally, I now read, in hopes that that will tilt the balance against history and he can maintain control of the House of Representatives in 2026. Exactly. It'd be Texas. Texas, Florida, I've heard Ohio, Indiana probably won't do it. Missouri might do it. And there's up to 12. Now the Democrats are saying, hey, you're going to do that. We're going to try to do it. Now it's harder for the Democrats because in the states they run, they, have created, commissions to do redistricting that are supposed to be nonpartisan. So we'll see, but you know, this is what Trump is trying to do. And, it makes total sense why he's doing it. He's scared to death of losing some of his power in a year and a half.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much, Congressman, for taking my question. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. Love talking to you. Thank you.
Trish, we have anybody else?
Yes, we actually have three hands. And Janine, you lowered your hand, so I'm going to go on to the next one. Area code 281665.
I think that's Michael.
Let us know.
Yeah, Michael.
Sounds like Michael from Texas.
Oh, you're right. I think so.
It is.
All right, Michael, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for coming on, Congressman. I always enjoy your insight. I have a whole bunch of questions from the economy, jobs, people losing their jobs, to how the rest of the world really sees Trump. And of course, I live in Texas, and my district is one of the districts they're talking about redrawing. So not going to change the way I vote, but anyway. However, those two questions about the economy, what do you think is going to happen when unemployment starts to increase? And I know we're not going to get the accurate numbers because he's changed the experts, and a lot of the people who do the studies are leaving. So when people start losing jobs, what do you think is going to happen to our economy?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen, as we've seen this before. First of all, whether the Bureau of Labor Statistics is allowed to give an honest assessment anymore, it won't be allowed to under Trump. But there are private entities. ADP does it every month. They give their private hiring numbers. Those will take on added significance. I'm already hearing anecdotal stories about people losing jobs or not being able to get new jobs. The job market is tightened up. When we get to what you're talking about, where actual layoffs are happening at a bigger thing, here's what happens. Tax revenue to the federal government goes down. The deficit goes up. Unemployment insurance payouts go up because there are more people receiving it. Distress spreads through the economy quite quickly. And before you know it, we're going to be in a recession, and what is the definition of a recession? Two successive quarters, that's 6 months straight, of negative economic growth. And we're going to head that way because of the dampening effects of tariffs and this immigration stuff. Because what Trump is doing is ripping workers out of the workforce of jobs that Americans won't do. And So the jobs are going to go empty and the services aren't going to be provided. A great thing is the agriculture. They don't won't have people to pick the food in the fields. What happens? Less food, higher costs for the food we do have, higher prices in the supermarket, fix into the whole thing. Slower economy, higher inflation. And those are a disaster for any president. And he's creating this. This is all on him. This isn't like other times we've seen it where you can blame OPEC for raising the price of oil or something. This is Trump raising the price on everything through this ill-conceived tariff thing.
So just a quick comment before we go into somebody else to reinforce what you said, Congressman. I recently talked to a bunch of visually impaired scholarship winners of the American Council of the Blind and asked them what they were concerned about, put them into small groups and asked them to think about. And three of the four groups talked about jobs, the challenges they're going to face finding a job. Mm-hmm. And that is, for me, raised alarm bells. We have a situation that is not going in a good direction for anybody, a young person trying to get a job, but especially if you come from a underrepresented group or people with disabilities. I think we're in for difficult times.
Yeah. And then one other thing I should throw in the long run, dampening the job market is AI. That is a huge factor.
Yeah.
I'm glad you
That is not Trump's fault. AI was coming and he doesn't understand it. Most of us don't understand it, but it is coming rapidly and is going to whack out a lot of jobs for what would have been college graduates. Lower level white collar jobs are going to be replaced by AI machinery, really. And that's going to be a problem.
Yep. Amen. I've said that all along. That's been my fear.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable fear, but I don't know what we can do about it.
Well, I don't know. What do you do about it? I mean, there's nothing you can do about it other than young people need to learn skills that can't be replaced by AI. I don't know what that is, but they need to do it. We still need, have a huge shortage in this country, believe it or not, of engineers, computer programmers, all that stuff that pays great. And we can't fill them with American educated kids. That's why foreigners come here to take those jobs.
Yeah. Even if those computer programs make AI,
yep.
Somebody had to make AI.
Oh yeah. No. Those jobs are going empty, which is why you have this influx of people from overseas. Legally, these are the ones who come here with work visas, but why are they coming here? Why are those jobs not filled by American boys and girls coming out of high school and college? I don't know.
Different conversation. Yeah. Who's next on the, on our list?
All right. So I'll just say we have 6 minutes and four hands. Now we have five. I don't think we're going to get to all these hands. Okay. Next we have Penny Moss.
Hi, Penny. Go ahead.
Can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. I want to make a couple of comments and I'll be quick. AI is really taking the blind community by storm because of the things that it can help us do. And I feel like, yes, there are problems with it. Yes, there are concerns, but a lot of it is how you use it. And I think there's still a need for good writers. There's still a need for people who know how to put reports together. I don't think it's going to negate that. The other thing that I'm really concerned about this thing with Trump going in and trying to get the states to, do redistricting in the middle of the 10-year census. I think that's wrong for him to interfere with those states, such as Texas, where I used to live. And it just really makes me angry that he is such a bulldozer and yet gets away with it so easily.
Well, the one thing, Penny, he controls, lock, stock, and barrel, is the Republican Party. No one dares go against him inside the Republican Party. So he's doing what that bulldozing in Republican states like Texas, where there's a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, and they won't dare stand up to him. Now, everybody else stands up to him. Democrats, independents, the rest of Americans say screw him. But the Republican Party in certain states and in Washington, D.C., with the House and Senate, they have all the power. So it makes him an enormously powerful politician right now. Now, that's not going to last. Nothing lasts. And in a year and a half less, who knows? He's not going to be as popular, as powerful, I mean. He won't be. And then the world will change and the worm will turn on Donald Trump.
I just wish it had happened sooner, that's all.
Yeah, well, it might happen quicker than we know. We don't know. We don't know. His poll numbers are going down. He, for a guy with a lot of power, he's scrambling around like he's scared of something. I'll tell you that.
And I think one thing too, this Epstein thing, you know, evangelicals are going to be losing respect for him if they find
out. I'm not sure about that, Penny. I'm sorry. I think there is support. I think they've already factored that into the equation. You know, some say he was saved after he did all this stuff, and so therefore we should forgive all this stuff.
Well, I happen to be an evangelical, and I don't buy any of that he's saved. But, you know, I just hope that something will happen that will change all this. That's very disturbing.
Thank you, Penny. We have about 1 minute for one more, so let's see who it is.
Okay, yeah, one more hand, and that would be Jean.
Welcome, Jean.
Hi, guys. So hey. I just wanted to make a comment or two. When we were talking about, when you were talking about the redistricting, all I could think about was Abbott recording a little welcoming thing to the convention in Dallas, and I thought, you know, it's probably a good thing he wasn't there in person, because I'm not sure how polite we would have all been. We've had a couple immigration things here, and one of them was this guy who had a European, Eastern European name. I don't remember it. He had been here for 25 years. He came illegally, yes. He reported to the court every 6 months like he was supposed to. He's had a job as a welder ever since he got here, and the last time he went to court, ICE took him.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's happening a lot, and they're even masked in the courthouse.
Wow.
And they rough these guys up, and if you stand next to the guy who's being arrested, and it's not really an arrest, they're not arresting him, they're seizing him. And if you stand next to him and try to keep the ICE guys off you, they'll arrest you too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a lawyer told us at the convention also about an immigration lawyer about somebody who'd been arrested and was out on bond and got retaken. And when he asked why, the ICE guy said, I have to meet my quota.
We are out of time, unfortunately. Sorry about that. We have to cut everybody short. Congressman, as always, great to have you. You've been very informative, keeping us up to date. And we appreciate you very much. We'll have you back very soon.
And thanks, Bob. Everybody. Just for the listeners, before you go, next time the congressman's on, which I think is in
October.
Yeah. John Gizzi is going to be on. John is the guy from Newsmax. So two of them will be on.
That would be fascinating. We'll look forward to that. Yeah, great. All right. Well, go safe with God's abundant blessings. I'm Bob Branco. He's Peter Altschul. Thanks, everybody. Catch you later.